Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I am so excited to have my friend, my client, my partner in crime, Kurt Klein, here today on the show. Hello, Kurt.
Hello.
So Kurt is the owner and principal architect of Modern House Architects and is actually my favorite architect. I have referred clients to him. He has done remodels of Eichler's, remodels of mid-century modern homes, and he does my favorite designs that I've seen. So can't wait to get started talking with you. Where did you start and what architects were you influenced by?
Well, I'm a Midwest kid, you know, and I think a lot of the mid-century architects were Midwest kids that ended up going to the coasts, and that's kind of what I did as well. Came to the Bay Area in 93 and knew nothing about the mid-century Eichler movement or any of the other subdivisions that we're in. Mm-hmm. Ended up getting lost in Saratoga and ended up on a, I think it was in over near Cox. And I said, these are amazing.
Yes. And you discovered them similarly to how I did.
Really?
Yeah. You drive up to them and you feel like you land on the moon.
Yeah. Right. George Jetson lives here and it looks yards ahead of everyone else. But I said, I want to work on these houses. And at that time in the 90s, they were getting torn down right and left. And people were putting arches and colonnades in front of them and trying to embellish them and make them something different. Mm-hmm. So our first work was really sort of taking all of that away. And we were giving renderings to clients and they'd say, oh my God, what did you do? I said, I took 50 years of bad decisions off your house.
Yes, exactly. Bring it back.
Didn't do anything. Really just stripped away all the old paint.
Yes.
And it was all there.
Yeah. And bringing it back to its original intention
is
so important.
Yep.
And you're the one person, you know, in partnering, we worked and sold many Eichlers together. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people understand this preservation, and you're a purist just like I am.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think that you understand it more than most is to make these homes feel new, but make you wonder when they were built. Were they built in the 50s and 60s, or were they built today?
Right.
So when you do Eichler remodels, what are your favorite things about them or favorite changes?
So the first things that we got involved with was really, I don't want to get into the weeds of structural issues, but we were running into a lot of headwind on trying to preserve the Eichlers with the current codes that were in effect. Partnered with some really, really good engineers, and we came up with some interesting systems. One engineer came up with something called flagpoling.
Okay. I do not know that term.
You know, the California's earthquake country. So you've got earthquake-resisting walls that have to be in. And a lot of the Eichlers, of course, didn't have much in the way of that. And we didn't want to add anything. So we would open up the floor, dig big piers down below the existing concrete, sometimes 8 feet down, embed a 3-inch steel column, wrap it with wood to make it look like the post that was there, and in a series of those steel columns would create a shear wall.
Okay.
So and they were flagpoled in the piers below the concrete. So it gave it enough stiffness and rigidity that we didn't have to change and add shear walls to make it compliant.
Wow. And you do a lot of tricks. I always loved how your homes are so delicate and you can do the thinnest roof lines. When people show me modern houses, they usually show me a modern new construction with the fattest roof, and
almost
it just looks
always
horrible.
Yeah. And that's just a function of, you know, what most architects encounter. You know, after the engineer and the energy compliance and the mechanical people get done with that roof envelope, it's 20, 24 inches thick at that point.
Right.
It's no longer a good modern home in my mind, because now it's got a big fat hat on very delicate verticals, and there's nothing attractive about that.
Right.
So it's really sort of combating all of that stuff as much as you can. Now, we can't get rid of all of it, but we try, instead of reintroducing air systems, we try to reuse radiant systems so we can get rid of all the ducting that's going in. There is a company that we use out of Italy that actually makes a cooling radiant panel.
Mm.
So, you know, Eichlers sometimes, they get hot, they get warm.
Right.
So you can use these to cool the house as well as heat the house. And really just working with an engineer and making sure that, you know, they don't put more in than they actually need.
Right. Yeah. Less is more.
Less is more.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And you told me that you love, you know, these godfathers of modernism, these architects were. Can you share with us a little bit about who's your favorite and why?
Probably a lot of architects like Neutra and Mies van der Rohe, and I do as well. A little askew from that, my education was at a university in the Midwest that had a studio instructor of mine who worked for Tadao Ando in Japan.
Mm.
So I have sort of mid-century modernists and early modernists, along with some Japanese modernism that shows up.
Yes.
Influenced by this instructor.
I can see that for sure in your work.
And that works in the Bay Area.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you're doing something special with ADUs, and I've never heard of anyone doing this. I wanted to share with our listeners your amazing ADU, which, if you can describe it, I'm still shocked by it.
So we started doing some ADUs on mid-centuries, and we were using the existing aesthetic and trying to tie that in. And it just didn't look right. It looked like a poor copy of the original. And so we deviated from that, and we've been deviating ever since. So our most recent ADU is a glass cube.
That's amazing.
We've taken the doors and window systems all the way to the roof line, top of the roof line, with some detailing that allows that to happen. There is some new window and door product on the market that's ultra thin frame. So we're using the ultra thin frame, 3/4 inch frames on doors and windows. So it's reflective, which I like. You know, at night, it's a little lantern in the backyard. During the day, it's just reflecting the architecture and the landscape around it.
Yes. And you do that with flooring as well.
Right? I do. Yeah. There's an old trick that the modernists used to use with water. And use water to get this infinite expression vertically. You can see the reflections, you can see the sky and the movement of the trees. And so we've been doing that on floors and interior surfaces. It's not that common, and I have to make sure people realize it's not ultra shine, ultra sheen.
Right.
But it gives you enough reflection that you can see the movement of things. And it's nice to see that happen during the day.
And I've seen a lot of your designs, which just stun me from beginning. And I think that one that I saw in Palm Springs is a very small house.
Yeah.
But you have a way of using this reflective light to make these homes feel huge.
Yeah, we try.
And you have, even you're building a one-bedroom
home.
That takes a lot of guts to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Typical architect. I bought the only property that no one would touch for 50 years, and I bought it.
Yes.
Great deal. Wonderful deal.
Yes.
Because it would fit a one-bedroom house on it.
No, I love that about you. I love that. And for those of you listening, there are a lot of people that think, you know, the bigger the better, and let's get acres and do this. Yeah. Kurt can do anything with any size property, any size budget. It's really amazing. So you've not only been doing flooring and this reflective lights, but you've been doing something very special with a company called Studio Becker.
Oh yeah.
Who I love. And this is around kitchens.
Yeah. So Studio Becker is a kitchen that we use on our new designs. And we've been using them for years, and it's a German made kitchen. And the owner, Rohr, asked us to design something a few years back, more of an urban style kitchen. Mm. And they're producing it. And the uniqueness of it is, you know, most open space design now has the kitchen within the living space. So after you're done preparing a meal, all of that either has to be put away or cleaned up or everything.
Exhausting.
It's exhausting, right? So this kitchen hides everything. The back wall of the kitchen is pocketed so you can hide everything, and it just is lacquer.
So cool.
And the island is lifted up. And one of my early instructors said, every modern house, the better spaces usually have furnishings that you can see underneath.
Yes.
So furniture has a leg to it. It doesn't sit on the floor. And so I took that one step further and created an island that is lifted. So it's on legs. They're hollow so we can get electrical and plumbing through them. But it's a cube of stone lifted up on polished stainless steel legs.
Amazing. And so clean, and I can imagine this futuristic look.
It's pretty sculptural. I mean, there's going to be five different stones that you can get for the island. Mm. But when the kitchen is not in use, it's a lacquered rear wall and a stone cube on polished stainless steel legs.
And you were just in Europe doing this tour for them. When are they releasing that?
So they're working on it now. So we went over to, Studio Becker has 8 factories in Germany, and I visited 4 of them. Mm. Just to see the mock-up. You know, drawings are one thing, but touching it, we actually changed the leg. I worked on the legs. We rendered the legs. We did drawings for the legs, and I thought, okay, this is perfect. I've got the proportions just right. And then I saw it. And the proportions were not right.
So when you see it, it's different, right?
So when you see it, it's different. It's a different scale than a building, you know, with a house or a structure. I've worked years and years in proportioning and scale, and I know what I'm going to get. With the kitchen, it's something different.
Yeah.
And so I actually changed the leg design after we left the factory.
Mm. What was that factory like? The Germans do things very...
Yeah, it was very enlightening. I understand why German products are so good now. The precision and the cleanliness of these factories blew me away.
Wow.
You can eat off of these factory floors. They're just amazing. Wow. Just a different way of putting things together.
Mm-hmm.
We toured a factory, not one of Studio Becker's factory. We toured a factory in, I forget the village that it was in. They manufacture the largest manufacturer of kitchens in the world. They manufacture 4,000 kitchens per day.
What?
4,000 kitchens per day.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and they're basically a silent manufacturer for a lot of kitchen companies.
Wow.
Yeah.
In Germany.
In Germany.
Wow.
Yeah. Enormous, enormous factory.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So besides Europe, you've been doing projects in Palm Springs, in the Bay Area, and Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I have to share, I was driving around. I was on vacation on the Big Island of Hawaii, and I went to this little area called Pu'ako. And a friend of mine and I were driving, and we came upon one of your designs, And I stopped. I told her, stop the car. Oh my gosh, look at this house. Mm. And this was the most amazing. It almost called to us. It was such a dynamic design. Mm. And we stopped. Mm. And I get out of the car. I said, I have to check this house out. It's so beautiful. And I see your sign there. And I remember I called you. I said, you're not going to believe where I am. But it's amazing to me how many people from California have been going to Hawaii, seeing your work, and hiring you to do their homes there.
Yeah, yeah. We're busier now in Hawaii than we are in the Bay Area at the moment.
Yes.
That was an interesting project that you saw. I can...
Yes, if you do yourselves a favor, those of you who are listening, and go to modernhousearchitects.com and check out his work in Hawaii. It was jaw-dropping.
It was challenging in that 2/3 of the site is in a drainage easement. Mm. We couldn't touch it. Which, you know, with the owner's program wanting a certain size house, that became a problem. We needed to use more of the site. So we traded trees that we were cutting down for pier locations. And so the house has a very identifiable Y brace that supports 1/3 of the house is cantilevered on these steel Y braces. And the reason the Y brace came about was because I was out of piers. I was given 11. So 11 penetrations within the floodplain.
Wow.
So we had to support 1/3 of the home on these 11 points of contact. And it created a very interesting design.
Well, it was so special. And I couldn't tell if it was built back then or built today.
Good.
And
I'm glad you said that.
It's so important. And I think so many architects miss this, that they want to make it bigger and wider. And I think the way that you have kept the integrity of the architecture, kept these homes as simple as possible.
Right.
It really, really works. And are you doing homes not only in Kona and Puakou? Are you going to other islands as
well? We are doing our first house on Oahu for a couple from New York. And that's been a fun experience.
Wow.
Honolulu's a different animal. I mean, if you... if you go to Hawaii, a lot of people say that's not Hawaii. But that's where... I spend a good portion of my time, and so it's an interesting place. But yeah, we're doing our first house there, and we're doing some interior remodels of mid-century towers. So we've gotten some contracts for mid-century.
For commercial?
No, for residential.
Oh, okay, when you said towers, I was thinking...
Well, Honolulu was, it was a post-war city that came about. There were no towers until after World War II. And the city evolved in about 15 years. And most of them were built within that modernist aesthetic. They're all concrete, they're all glass.
I love that.
And the same thing has happened to those towers that's happened to Eichler's here. You know, over the years, a lot of interesting design decisions were applied to them.
So we're
removing some of those design decisions
in
some of these condos. Just getting back to the bones of the structure and then working with an aesthetic that we think would have been, you know, appropriate for the space.
Yes. I love how you described it. We've done some other video tours together. We walked through a Craig Elwood that I have on my YouTube channel. And Kurt really dissects these homes and talks about how to optimize them. But you said something about mid-century modernism that was pretty amazing. How do you tie these two worlds together, new construction and the past?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
That's one of the most challenging things. Trying to really give it that delicate modernist aesthetic, you've got to really work with your engineers. You know, current codes are kind of flying in the face of doing those things. Window and door product. There's new window and door product that's very thin now, which meets all the codes. And then you have the energy requirements. And lastly, some communities that we do work in really don't want modernist new homes built.
Mm-hmm.
They've actively written master plans that almost make it impossible to design a modernist home in those communities.
It's really ridiculous to me. You mentioned before when we were trying to work on a design, they require 35% glass.
Yeah, right? Basically they're trying to get a 35% glazing to a home. And of course, there's not too many modernist homes that would fall within that. There's also there's a lot of communities in the Bay Area that enforce what I call sort of a wedding cake massing to a house.
Mm-hmm.
Your house that we're in right now is opposite of that.
Yes.
The heaviness is on top and it gets elevated and cantilevered as it goes down to the ground.
Right.
And I don't think this house, if it were new, would be approved currently.
Definitely
it
not.
It would not be approved.
Definitely
and
not.
It's a sad thing.
Right.
Because every time I come into your home, it puts a smile on my face. And people don't know this today. It's not a nice day in the Bay Area. It's cloudy.
Right.
It's cold.
Yes.
I was not happy. I come into the house and I'm happy.
Well, that's the bond that we all share as modernists, is that these homes make us feel more relaxed. They put us in touch with nature. They are an immediate connection to ourselves and our grounding feeling.
Yeah, that's true.
So I cannot thank you enough for all of your work on preserving these homes and keeping that grounding.
There was an architect that I used to work with. So I didn't quote this, but I love the quote. It said, "He doesn't think any serial killers were spawned in modernist homes."
Oh my gosh. Well,
they're
villain
too happy.
And every...
But you're right. Yes. Hollywood villainizes modern homes.
Yes.
They do.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And all the bad guys lived.
Especially Lautner.
Oh, right. In John Lautner design, that's where the villain lived.
Yeah, it's true.
Right.
It's true.
Right. Very interesting how we're put in that category with. So funny.
And we run into that, you know. There is a backlash to some of this architecture in neighborhoods. You know, because of the fact that it does emit light. It does, in traditional terms, create privacy issues at times, you know.
Yes.
And those are the trade-offs, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
I love that. Thank you so much, Kurt. And thank you for being on the show. For those of you listening, please do yourselves a favor and check out modernhousearchitects.com. And we'll be showing you more of Kurt's designs on the channel. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks, Kurt.
Thanks, Monique.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.